Final hour, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic, Nick Keys are here with you on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Hope everybody's doing well. We'll have Daniel Popper from The Athletic coming up at 9:30, who covers the L.A. Chargers. We'll get his thoughts on what many people consider to be maybe the most talented roster in the AFC, coming up later this hour at 9:30.
Or at least number two.
I think a lot of people think they're number one.
Yeah?
Yeah.
A lot of people think they're more talented than the Bills?
I think I might think they're more talented than the Bills.
Wow. I don't know, man. That's kind of
Well, you think the Bills are going 17-0?
Mind blown on that one. They do have a very talented roster, though.
They do.
We can all agree on that.
Looking forward to the coaching that comes out of the L.A. Chargers this year. Going to get an update on that at 9:30.
Yeah, I was looking at these coach of the year lists, or top coaches lists, talking about Vrabel, and Brandon Staley's not super high on those lists.
He's not on the list. Shocked by that.
In the 20s, typically.
It's a good segue.
It is a good segue.
Conversation with Mike Vrabel. We talked about this a little bit earlier in the show. He is the reigning NFL Coach of the Year. With that in mind, and based on what we've seen from Vrabel thus far, how do you think Vrabel should be viewed heading into the season in terms of where he fits in with the top coaches around the league? I mean, we don't necessarily have to come up with, well, I think Belichick's number one and Vrabel's at four. But in terms of how he's viewed in around the league, based on what he's done, also based on what he's not yet done so far in the postseason with no Super Bowl appearances or a Super Bowl victory to his credit now either, albeit very early in his coaching career, but those things do matter when you have these sort of discussions.
Yeah, it's an interesting discussion because some would say, well, if you don't have a ring – Don't even come into the discussion. But Kyle Shanahan does not have a ring, but I think that he's got to be right there. To me, it's like if you talk about the top coach in the NFL right now, I still put a high value on doing something over a period of time and demonstrating some level of consistency, and especially if you're able to win with different groups of players. Now, granted, that may be just because your GM is that good, and they've been able to bridge different eras of players. But the guys who have just been very good in this league for a long time, Andy Reid, Bill Belichick, Mike Tomlin, and John Harbaugh, I put Pete Carroll there too.
Yeah.
Those are my five, long-term, successful, in every case, you have at least one championship, right? So to me, I think you start there, and then I do buy into the McVay. I mean, come on, McVay. We know McVay is a very good coach.
Yeah.
Just won it all, and he's been a very good coach, and Kyle Shanahan is too. And so I think that's a kind of a seven, and I think it'd be hard to put too many people above Vrabel after that. That's how I look at it. But everybody has all these lists, these media lists of that. I think just about everyone I've seen has Matt LaFleur listed above Mike Vrabel, which is a flaw in thinking to me. It is, look, he inherited a really good team, the most talented QB in the league. They've played like it. He's been a good coach. He deserves credit. I absolutely would not at all put him above Mike Vrabel on a list of.
He's 39-10.
Yeah, and that's great.
I would not put him over
13s,
Mike Vrabel.
13s, 3 years in a row.
Yeah.
But let's talk about the competition, what he has, and also I think you have to put a premium on playoff performance, which of course isn't great for Vrabel lately, but he does have one really impressive run.
He does. Now, that's going to when we start to get into the conversation about Vrabel moving forward, that's going to be the next thing that has to change. We talked earlier about winning games you're supposed to win, and that's what makes this Giants game pretty intriguing to me. Can this Titans team out of the jump, can they do that this year and handle business the way that I think they should coming up on Sunday? But number two, when you start to talk about Vrabel moving forward, playoffs are going to be a part of that. So as much as we talk about Tannehill and what that means for him, and if they get back to the playoffs this year, that's when the spotlight is going to be on Tannehill. When you start talking about best coaches, you got to have playoff success that goes along with that. And Vrabel's first crack at it in playoffs was really good. He got the AFC title game. Nobody thought they would get there. And ever since then, you have a disappointing one and done against Baltimore at home. And we all know what happened last year against Cincinnati. So, number one, getting back there is going to be a challenge this year. If they do get back there, you know, I think there's going to be some pressure on not just Tannehill, but Vrabel and this whole team to, while you're still in this quote-unquote window, got to do some damage in the playoffs. And they haven't done that the last couple of years.
Yeah, and that's what was really interesting about of the two losses. I think it certainly was a coaching failure too, in terms of the OC. I mean, Todd Downing has to share a decent amount of the blame. Most of it still goes to Tannehill, to me.
Yeah.
But mute. But it's interesting when you go back a year, because that was a hugely disappointing offensive performance. Remember, Arthur Smith was everybody's darling. Everybody wanted Arthur Smith, and it was like, man, his last game with the Titans as OC
wasn't good.
It wasn't good at all. So it's been two straight just offensive, brutal performances. And it's kind of, it's five straight halves of really bad offensive football from the Titans in the postseason. So
it's five straight.
That's a big deal.
It's five straight halves as well of teams pretty much totally shutting Derrick Henry down, which we talk about Tannehill a lot. That's when he has to come up big. If they're going to take away Henry, you got to come up big and make some throws. But there's also, like, Henry in the playoffs, he was such a force in that New England game, in that Baltimore game. I mean, heck, even the Kansas City game, they won with Mariota. He was great in that game. And it's not really been the case. So if that's going to be the game plan for teams once the Titans get to the playoffs, which it will be, I don't care what kind of a year Tannehill has this year, if Henry's healthy, their game plan is going to be to try to slow him down. I mean, the door's right there for the Titans. I mean, we're already talking about playoff football here with the Titans, and the regular season starts on Sunday.
So. And most people don't think they're going to be in it.
I know.
Although I will point out for the national media bashers that Peter King put out his predictions.
He
has the Titans going 10-7, win the division. The Colts going 9-8 and not making the playoffs. So
he is an outlier.
It's not across the board. There are some people who still believe in the Titans.
There are. By the way, Chris from Atlanta on the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, says, well, it finally happened. Joe has turned into Buffalo Joe with his love of the Bills this year. That's, do love you some Buffalo Bills this year.
Yeah.
I can't wait to see your predictions later this week.
That makes me think of Buffalo Bill from Silence of the Lambs, which is not cool, man.
That's not who you want to be.
Buffalo Joe. Hey, look, I'm bullish on the Bill. I'm billish is what I am.
Yes, you are.
I think they're good. I think that's the best roster. Up and down, and starting with who I think is going to win MVP, Josh Allen. So, I mean, it's like they're going like 15-2. I don't know what to tell you guys.
Well, that's what makes this game important. Look, I think it's fair to point out the Titans have had a pretty good amount of success against Buffalo the last couple of years. This one is different. You're going on the road to Buffalo this time against a team that I think is more talented than they've been, and a quarterback that I think is continuing to get better in Josh Allen. That makes this game Sunday very important for the Titans. You need to win this game. You know, this is not a situation, and Corey Curtis brought this up earlier. You got the Bills, the Raiders, and the Colts coming up. Those are obviously huge AFC games. Each game you lose that you're supposed to win, let's say you lose this Giants game, you gotta sneak that and grab it from somewhere else. It would be nice to see the Titans this week come out and handle business the way that I think they should in this game. I think the Titans are clearly better than the Giants, and I know it's a new season and all that cliche stuff you can throw out there, but the Titans should win this game, and I think they should win it pretty easily.
They should.
If they don't, be an interesting show on Monday.
Well, look, if they win 27-24, okay, you're 1-0 in the NFL. Yeah, you're 1-0 in the NFL. Got stuff to work on. You always, coaches love the stuff to work on in the wake of a win. You know, like Clark Lee, it's like, hey, work on some stuff.
Yeah.
But you're looking at the film of a win. So, yes, I agree that they should win this game by – I think they should win this game by a touchdown or more. And you'd like to see them just come out and just, you know, and just lay the wood. But
I just want to see them execute well. Like, that's the thing. Like, you need to be able to be ready to go from the jump. Obviously, they weren't last year, and I don't expect anything like that. But if you come out and you're just stumbling all over yourself offensively, it's going to be a concern moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, you hope that there's execution in the run game. Derrick Henry has a good day. You hope that at least with Woods and NWI and Hooper, you know, that those three guys and Tannehill have exactly what we've seen all camp. This is where camp should translate to regular season. You know, getting good work in with people, and it just seems like those three receivers and Tannehill have a good thing. Well, it seems the same way with Kyle Phillips, frankly.
Yeah.
I think he's going to come out and make some catches on Sunday. Treylon Burks is the big question mark, interesting point of this game. I think he's definitely going to play a fair amount, and I think they're going to try to get him going. I think it'd be a big deal for him and them if they can find some chunk plays with him.
We'll take your thoughts on the Titans, 615-737-1025 on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. What do you make of their week one matchup against the Giants? We've made it to the regular season. It is almost here. We'll continue that discussion coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game, streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by the Law Offices of Amanda Gentry. We are live from the Hillside Medical Game Studio on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Looking ahead to week one for the Tennessee Titans, coming up against the New York Giants. Right now on the FanDuel Sportsbook, Titans a 5.5-point favorite against the Giants coming up on Sunday. So I'm interested to see if that line moves throughout the week. 5.5 is interesting. If I'm a Titans fan, I would take it right now, but that's just me. We'll see what happens on that front.
Yeah, I suppose that'll probably stay around the same. I'm on a different front. Look at that Vols line. Is that going to be like 17 by the end of the entire Vols fandom?
It's gone from 4.5 to 6.5.
Putting mortgages on it.
Yeah. Whew. Time kickoff comes around, they'll be 25-point favorites on the road.
Yeah. Ease up, folks. Ease up. But, the Titans, I guess that's about right.
Well, the question I have is, what sort of a threat is the Giants offense going to pose to this defense? Like, I've still, even with Harold Landry out, in this matchup, I feel pretty good about the Titans defense. Now, Saquon Barkley's back, and we know that he's got a lot of talent, and he's a dual threat. He can run the ball well. He's also a big part of their receiving game when he's in there. But, you know, Daniel Jones just doesn't really scare me a whole lot if I'm a Titans fan out there. So I'm interested to see. Now, it is Brian Daboll. He's coming in. We know what system he runs. Obviously, he did a really good job in Buffalo. You know, what sort of a threat can this Giants offense pose against a Titans defense that I still think in this matchup, even without Harold Landry, is pretty good. And I think they got a lot of playmakers out there.
I mean, this is a huge season for Daniel Jones.
Yeah.
And I'm not a huge fan. I mean, I don't think it's going to end up working out for them with the pick. But with Barkley and, you know, Galladay, Tony, if he plays, I love the Wandell Robinson pick. They do have some interesting guys. Now, the offensive line has been a huge concern for them. And, I mean, I think the Titans advantage Titans, you know, and then, of course, their pass rushers, they've been trying to build that, and you got question marks there with their health. On paper, Titans are clearly a better team than the Giants. But in terms of that particular matchup, offense, Giants offense, Titans defense, look, if Daniel Jones has a good game, he comes out firing and he's accurate and sharp and focused, he does have guys who can make plays against this Titans secondary.
Offensively for the Titans, I'm interested early on to see how much they use the tight ends with Hooper and Chigakonkwo. You know, I guess Jeff Swaim to a certain extent, but in the passing game, Okonkwo and Hooper, how much of a difference do they make immediately? I mean, we know this. The tight ends for the Titans last year were really not factors for the most part throughout the course of the season. You know, Pruitt had some big catches in the end zone. I thought Firkser came on a little bit later in the year and was a little bit better, but not much from the tight end group last year. How big of a difference do they make immediately? And if they can make a difference immediately, how much does that change the way this offense looks in terms of Ryan Tannehill and his comfort level early on? Because I think right now with the receiving core and the shape it's in, we'll see if Burks is a factor. We'll see, you know, how good Robert Woods is early on at creating separation. Like, he needs the tight ends to be a weapon for him early on, and I think there's a chance they will be in this game, and that's probably offensively to me, you know, other than the obvious of how's Derrick Henry going to look and how's Treylon Burks going to look. The tight ends to me are right there among the top storylines heading into this game.
Yeah, I'll be surprised if they're not utilizing even Swaim in the passing game a little bit. I think Swaim and Hooper will be on the field quite a bit together. I think the Titans, they just look like they're probably going to go back to being more of a two tight end offense this year. I think that certainly makes sense from a personnel standpoint. They've strengthened at tight end. They've weakened at wide receiver. Last year it was like so many receivers. You're just going to be an 11 all the time, and they were more. And I just – I mean, look, their best offense – in this offensive scheme, the best offense they've had has been the two tight end look with Tannehill throwing to the tight ends. And I just think Hooper is going to be – I'm going to say this, and he's going to have a catch for 7 yards, but I don't think that's going to happen. I think Hooper is going to be targeted by Tannehill a lot early and often. I think it's going to happen throughout the season. I think he's actually not a bad late-round pick if you're fantasy drafting this week, by the way. Not to give any you know, secrets away for the Robbie and Rex Road fantasy draft.
We've got some thoughts on Dontrell Hilliard to get to. Jonathan on YouTube says – don't forget Dontrell Hilliard on third downs. TD says he runs routes like a wide receiver. Dennis on the text line throwing out the question, who gets more carries in the game coming up on Sunday, Hilliard or Haskins? That's an interesting one. I would guess Hilliard.
This is a really interesting one. And in fact, we had a, you know, we had like a fantasy question at the Athletic. And I said for my development that if I was handcuffing, for anybody out there who does fantasy drafting, if you draft a running back really high, it's a good idea to handcuff with drafting their backup late. I think I would. I think Hilliard's the guy. Now, when he's in a third down role, if they give somebody else a series, does that mean they give it to Haskins? I don't know. If Derrick Henry went down, I think Dontrell Hilliard would be their running back. That's what I believe right now. And it doesn't mean that Haskins couldn't be that at some point, but like right at this moment, that it would be Dontrell Hilliard.
I mean,
and absolutely great point on him on third down. I think you're going to see him be a really nice addition to the offense.
They have Julius Chestnut in that role on the team, do they not?
They do have Julius Chestnut on the team. That is true.
So maybe the real question is who gets more carries, Chestnut, Haskins, or Hilliard?
I mean, it's a question some people are asking. Not me, but some people. But, hey, again, good for Julius Chestnut. Look, in all seriousness, naked eye from afar, from the sideline.
I mean, you look good.
You can make a case that Chestnut ran it a little bit better than Haskins did in camp. There certainly isn't some big gap between them right now.
I'm still interested to see what their roster looks like come game day on that front.
Yeah, and then
Could be different, and then, you know, at receiver, is Josh Gordon a factor? Like, is he going to be activated, or are they going with Cody Hollister as their fifth receiver? You know, hopefully, if you're the Titans, your fifth receiver not getting a whole lot of playing time out there offensively. But I am interested to see if Josh Gordon, if he shows them enough this week at practice where they feel comfortable with him being the fifth guy on game day. I would still, in a perfect world to me, I'd rather take my chances with Josh Gordon if you feel like you have anything left in the tank as your fifth guy than Hollister, but I think there's also a real chance that doesn't happen and that Hollister's the guy on Sunday.
If Gordon's really good in practice and he's picking everything up and he's ready to go, you know, you could obviously always have injuries. Like, let's say you lose someone key or a couple people late in the game. Would you rather have like a Josh Gordon out there as a possible playmaker or a Cody Hollister? I mean, I'd rather go with Gordon. But, yeah, I mean, at this point it's hard. Like, but at the same time I say that and then ask me to predict it, and I'm going to predict that he's not going to be active on Sunday. So we'll see.
And with all of that being said, to me, still the biggest storyline offensively, and you can go through Henry and the tight ends and Tannehill and all that stuff, but the biggest storyline is going to be, well, how in the world does that offensive line hold up? Both in the run game and the passing game. Like, it's been a while, for me at least, since we've had some concerns about, you know, the run blocking going on with this line. I'm interested to see how that looks, albeit against what we think is going to be a little bit of a depleted front for the Giants heading into this game. But, you know, Petit Frere making the start at right tackle. How does he hold up? What does the protection look like for Tannehill in this game? You know, that's going to be paramount, not only for the game, but how they move forward here with a much stiffer test in game two coming up against Buffalo.
Yeah, it's going to be a story all year. It's the biggest concern. It's the biggest, to me, thing that can derail this team. And it's also, I think with Petit Frere, we're going to see growing pains, and you're going to see help that way. And if Taylor Lewan can make it so you don't even need to worry about him, then okay, well, that you're shifting your help toward Petit Frere, fine. But to me, the Aaron Brewer thing is just really interesting. They love him. We know that. And he's done well when he's had to fill in. We know that too. How does he hold up as a starting left guard in the NFL? There is a lot, like, there's a lot of enthusiasm and optimism about what he is, but I'm just really interested to see it. And it's especially in some matchups where his size would seem to be a big disadvantage. You know, and Kaharski's brought this point up, and I think it's a good one. Even if he looks good early in the season, 17 games of that?
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, sometimes you have to really work hard to keep weight up during a season. But I'm really interested to watch him and to watch Brewer, Lewan, when they run outside zone going that way. You know, like we've seen some monster car crashes with Saffold and Lewan. What's it look like with Brewer and Lewan?
Wouldn't it be nice and fun to have to work hard to keep your weight up?
Yeah. Yes. I mean, I lived that. Like in high school, I lived that.
Those days are long gone for me, my friend.
Yeah. Yeah. That does sound amazing, though. Kudos to you, Aaron Brewer.
That's right. 615-737-1025. 615-737-1025. Coming up next, we'll be joined by Daniel Popper from The Athletic, who covers the L.A. Chargers. We'll continue our look around the AFC with him. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Keyser here with you on this Monday morning. Take a look around the AFC, and to help us do that, we go to our 1025 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in Daniel Popper from The Athletic, who covers the L.A. Charger. Daniel, good morning. How are you? Thanks for joining us this morning.
Doing great. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Glad to have you here. So, Daniel, obviously a lot of expectations for this Chargers team heading into the year with the additions they made in the offseason, Justin Herbert at quarterback entering into his third season. What do you make of what the Chargers are on paper and how that translates to what you think they could be in a loaded AFC West heading into this year?
Yeah, I mean, top to bottom, it's the best roster they've had since I started covering this team in 2019. It's the most balanced roster, the most complete roster. The real priority this offseason was going out and retooling on defense, revamping on defense. It really was an overhaul because they were bad defensively last season. They couldn't stop the run. They couldn't get off the field on third down. So they go out. They get J.C. Jackson, the best cornerback on the market. They trade for Khalil Mack to improve their edge rushing. They signed two defensive linemen, Sebastian Joseph Day and Austin Johnson. They bring in Bryce Callahan. So you're looking at as many as seven new starters on defense, and they really felt like they had to get bigger and more physical up front to defend the run, and they had to get more depth in the secondary so that they could play man-to-man on third down and get off the field. I think they're going to be better defensively. If they can just be like a middle-of-the-pack defense instead of, you know, they're 26th in DVOA last year, you know the offense is going to be elite with Justin Herbert. And so that's going to, you know, put them in the playoffs if they can put together that on offense and defense and be a little bit better on special teams as well.
Yeah, and Daniel, on Herbert, I think anybody who watches the NFL at all would agree that he is a special talent who could be a special player for a long time. What do you think is next for him? Is there do you detect any sort of growth change in him in the preseason, in the offseason?
Yeah, I mean, we've all seen the physical tools. I think what you're going to start to see this year from Justin Herbert is just a mastery, you know, of the position and of the system from a mental perspective. He's an underrated processor, and people in the building think that he can be like a Drew Brees-level processor in terms of how he sees the game, and that's really where he's taking the next step. This is going to be the first time in a long time that he's been in the same system for two straight years. I mean, he did it once in college, and that was really the only time he had three different offenses in college, and two, obviously, so far in the NFL. So being more comfortable in Joe Lombardi's scheme, understanding that scheme better, and then doing a lot of what they call football 202 stuff, You know, he started changing his cadence of the line of scrimmage. That's one thing. You know, he's been watching a lot of Aaron Rodgers. Corey Linsley, the Chargers center, played with Aaron Rodgers for a long time in Green Bay, and so he started changing his cadence of the line of scrimmage, trying to draw defensive players offside. Things like that, you know, the next level, you know, the master's version, you know, of playing quarterback, some of these next level things, that's what you're going to start seeing him do. And then he's just going to have all these banked experiences from seeing what opposing defenses are trying to do to him. And so it's really scary to think what's going to happen when you marry, like, the physical tools that he has with, you know, that mental ability that's really going to start rounding out this year as he's seen more and as he gets more comfortable in Joe Lombardi's offensive system.
What do the Chargers feel like Khalil Mack still has left in the tank, given he's, you know, he's 31 years old, he's obviously been a phenomenal player, and that combo of Mack and Joey Bosa at outside linebacker, what do the Chargers feel like he's got kind of still left in the tank heading into this year?
Yeah, they feel like he's got a lot more left in the tank than a lot of people think. You know, a lot of people have sort of written Khalil Mack off, that he's in decline, obviously coming off a foot injury that limited to 7 games last year. But, you know, I went back and watched his film from last year. He still has a lot of juice as a pass rusher, but the one area that the Chargers are really excited about is what he's going to bring as a run defender. And that showed up in training camp. Like, he is an excellent, excellent run defender on the edge. And for a team that really struggled against the run last year, obviously you talk a lot about the interior linemen and them going out and signing these two guys, Sebastian Joseph Day and Austin Johnson, bigger guys. But they think that Khalil Mack is going to be just as important to their improved run defense in terms of setting the edge, making those splash plays on the outside. He did it a bunch in training camp. And as long as he can stay healthy, which is obviously a big if, I think he's going to bring a lot to this football team, and we'll see if he's able to stay on the field. That's really what it comes down to.
Daniel, Brandon Staley, a guy who I think justifiably took some criticism for some in-game decisions last year. Obviously, a you know promising young coach overall. What's the feeling on him from you know even from Chargers fandom going into this season? Like, and then how is he just I guess viewed even in terms of the front office?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, if you do have any questions about his fourth down decision making, I would suggest you go to theathletic.com and read the feature that I wrote specifically about that topic, because there's a lot that goes into it, a lot that goes into the modeling. But the Chargers love him as a coach. The front office ownership love him as a coach. I think over the course of the season, his decision making really was a positive. Specifically, if you talk about fourth downs, I mean, there was a bunch of wins early in the season, whether it's the Chiefs in week 3, the Raiders in week 4, the Browns in week 5, the Bengals in week 11. That all were pretty much direct result of successful conversions on fourth down. There were a couple decisions late in the season that didn't go their way, but the Chargers feel like they have a real advantage in their head coach in terms of how he makes decisions, how he deals with players, and we'll see if it comes to fruition this year. But the one thing I'll say is this, like it has to happen this year. Ownership went out and spent a ton of cash this offseason, you know, top 5 in the league in cash spending, whether it was trading for Khalil Mack and converting his salary to signing bonus, whether it was all of these free agents they signed, whether it was doing the Derwin James deal. You know, they spent a lot of cash, and the time is now. Justin Herbert's on a rookie deal. Brandon Staley has gotten all of his pieces that he needs defensively to run the scheme. They have to make the playoffs this year, and they have to win, or else there's going to be some serious questions asked. Like, that's sort of where the organization is at.
Daniel Popper from The Athletic on with us here on Robbie and Rex Road. So, Daniel, thinking back to draft time, a lot of the conversation here around the Titans centered around Zion Johnson and the role that he could play if the Titans were able to get him. Obviously, that didn't happen, and he ends up with the Chargers. What have been the impressions thus far with Zion Johnson out of Boston College?
Yeah, he's just a freak physically. Like, to be that strong at that age is really, really impressive, and you've seen it show up, you know, in his run blocking in training camp, in his pass rush, you know, pass blocking in those one-on-ones, particularly like in the Cowboys practice. They're really excited about what he's going to be able to bring. I, you know, just from what I've seen, I think he's like a little step ahead as a run blocker than he is in pass protection. Like, he's going to be a real difference maker as a run blocker from the get-go, and he might have a little bit, you know, more of a learning curve in terms of pass protection, passing off stunts, things like that. Some of those issues popped up during training camp. But the Chargers really felt like they needed to solidify the right side of their line, because they could have really only run in one direction last year. Like, the left side of their line was fantastic with Corey Linsley, left guard Matt Filer, and then all-pro rookie Rashawn Slater. But they got kind of predictable late in games if they were in four-minute offense trying to protect leads. Everyone pretty much knew they were going to run to the left side because they didn't have much juice on the right side. So they bring in Zion Johnson. They feel like now they can have a much more balanced rushing attack. He's going to be a key piece of that and take some of the pressure off of Justin Herbert, particularly in these late-game situations when they're trying to protect leads.
Daniel, I can't wait to watch just this division and all the games of these teams playing against each other. I mean, I think you could make a strong case for any of them probably. But how do you view just that race and what it's going to be like to watch the AFC West this year?
Yeah, I'm extremely excited. It's going to be a bloodbath. I mean, these teams are going to be going at it all season, just starting with the quarterback play. I mean, it's certainly the best group of quarterbacks I've ever seen in a division. Now, I haven't been doing this that long. You know, I can't say I've been in the business for 40 years, but it's a really, really talented group of quarterbacks. And when you talk about, you know, some of these edge rushing tandems, whether it's Max Crosby and Chandler Jones, whether it's Randy Gregory and Bradley Chubb, you can sort of go down the list. You got Chris Jones and Frank Clark in Kansas City. It's going to be really, really entertaining football. Every AFC West game is going to be must-see television. And like you said, I agree with you. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if any of these teams come out on top, and I wouldn't be surprised if any team ends up in last place. There's just that much talent, and you know that it's going to be a war of attrition here, as each team has to play, you know, six games against really talented opponents and play twice a season. And, you know, these divisional games, as you guys know, are always really tough because the teams know each other really well. It's going to be a blast to cover because it's really unpredictable because of how much talent there is in the division.
Daniel, when people start talking about, you know, the top running backs in the game, obviously Henry comes up here and Jonathan Taylor and Alvin Kamara and all these different guys. What makes Austin Eckler so special and such a good fit for that offense in particular?
Yeah, the first thing is just his versatility. He can line up anywhere and he can produce from anywhere. So he can run and catch out of the backfield. He can line up in the slot and win there. He can line up wide and win there. He's fast. He's great. He has great contact balance. He's extremely strong. He can run outside of tackles, he can run inside of tackles. So that's just a long-winded way of saying that he can do literally everything you want an offensive weapon to do on the field. And then he's like, you know, from a work ethic perspective, you know, they call him PFP, pound for pound, because he's the strongest guy pound for pound on the team. He's an absolute nut job in the weight room. And so he just brings everything you want, and he plays with a certain level of fire, you know, just because he was an undrafted free agent. He had to battle his way onto this roster in 2017, and he knows, you know, how fleeting the NFL is. And so he has everything he could possibly want in a player. And, you know, 20 touchdowns in a season, that's really, really impressive. I don't know if he gets there this year, but, you know, in this offense, you need a player like that. You know, Alvin Kamara obviously thrives in this offense in New Orleans. Joe Lombardi brought it to L.A., and you need a running back that has that kind of versatility that can line up anywhere, and he creates mismatches all over the field.
Sony Michel just making the short drive over. Is he going to help this team?
Yeah, I think so. Isaiah Spiller, the running back they took in the fourth round at a Texas A&M, sprained his ankle in the second preseason game, and I think that the Chargers sort of looked at their running back room after that happened and got a little worried about their depth. And so they had Sony Michel available. They went out and brought him over. We'll see how this thing sort of shakes out. I mean, they've been looking for a second running back behind Austin Eckler for a while. I thought they could have brought in a veteran in the offseason. Would have made sense just to maybe get some reliability there behind Austin Eckler so he doesn't have to play 700-plus snaps this season. They opted to go with a younger player, Isaiah Spiller. They had Josh O'Kelly coming back. He was a fourth-round pick 3 years ago. And then they've had Larry Roundtree, who was a sixth-round pick last year, and they felt like one of those young guys is going to emerge. I don't know if it really turned out exactly how they wanted it to with Spiller's injury. So they bring in Michelle, a veteran who, in particular, is very good in pass protection, and so they feel like they have a reliable guy they can play on all three downs. Maybe, you know, not the most productive guy in the world, but a guy that at least can pick up blitzes and be a solid in pass protection on third down. So we'll see. He has a chance to claim the second running back spot. I think early in the season, it'll be Joshua Kelly. And I think ideally for the organization, you know, Spiller will come back from this ankle injury and take over that role and run away with it. And it'll be a 1-2 punch of Eckler and Spiller sort of in the second half of the season. But yeah, he'll be in the mix. We'll sort of see what happens as they start getting into games here. And, you know, they'll feed the hot hand. That's really what they said all along in terms of that second running back spot behind Austin Eckler.
Well, Daniel, I don't think there's any doubt the Chargers are going to be one of the most intriguing teams in the league this season. Thanks so much for taking time to join us this morning. Really appreciate it, and we'll talk to you down the road.
Sounds good, guys. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Daniel Popper from The Athletic, our guest here on Robbie and Rexrow. We'll continue the conversation. Welcome more of your thoughts on our phone and text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Joe Rexrow, you've got a message for us as we head into the break.
I do. A message on OrderGreen.com, which is the nation's number one online shop for all things cannabis. Look, this has been tremendous for me. Stress, anxiety, inflammation. You know, I get on there in the hoops court. Sometimes it's a little bit of a toll on the body. These products are fantastic. You can shop online. You got a wide selection of high quality THC and CBD products. You got edibles, you got gummies, vapes, flowers, you name it, they got it. And their team's got extensive knowledge for every product too. So you can know you're receiving the highest quality from the providers nationwide. Same day delivery right to your doorstep, and you get 25% off every shipment of gummies if you have a subscription. So promo code JOE20, get 20% off your first purchase. Again, that is OrderGreen.com.
Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Keyser here with you on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Thanks to Daniel Popper for joining us in the last segment. Joe, we're going to find out pretty quickly what the Chargers are made of, I think. They play the Raiders coming up on Sunday, and then a week from Thursday, taking on Kansas City on Thursday Night Football. So two divisional games right off the jump, the Raiders and the Chiefs, starting pretty quick for the Chargers coming up this week.
Yeah, it's, and like Daniel said, just every single one of these matchups is going to be must-see TV. I think the more I think about it and the more I just wonder about the Chiefs, wonder about Tyreek Hill and just, you know, Juju Smith-Schuster is who you're hitching your wagon to, and Edwards-Helaire can't stay healthy and their defense is getting older. I think on paper, the Chargers – actually are, I don't want to say like clear like they should be the favorite. They're clearly the best team. But I think they
I think on paper they're clearly the best team in the West. And now, a lot of people don't agree with that. I get it. But I think they are.
And that's saying something given, like he said, like we've been saying, how all of them look dangerous. I mean, the Raiders, who knows? Josh McDaniels getting another shot at coaching. I sure like their offensive skill.
I do.
And I think the Broncos, they feel like their D is going to be just as salty, and now you bring in Russ. The more I think about the Chiefs, I feel like there could be a bit of a step back this year. Like, they could be, like, last place.
You want to pick them to miss playoffs?
There's a hot take. No. I'm not going to – it's hard to pick Pat Mahomes to not make the playoffs. But remember how bad their offense looked for so much of last year? Came in here, and I was like, what is this?
Dane Cruikshank out there shutting people down.
Right? Yeah, he's just like, come on, Kelsey, I got you. I mean, I was like, they're in Kansas City uniforms, but that's not them. And they figured it out, of course. They end up getting to the NFC title game, but
– AFC.
Yeah, sorry. Close enough. Just 1-0 mutes for you.
Yeah, it is that.
I don't know. I feel – and then, you know, I knew as soon as we talked to Daniel about the Chargers, you think of all the things they have.
Yeah.
And it is like good receivers. They're good in the trenches. They got some pass rushing. I mean, they've got –
great back.
And now you throw Mac in there. What if Mac has some – yeah, great back. I mean, you asked him about it. It's like people don't talk about him enough. But what if Mac is going to have this – career resurgent kind of season for them with Bosa.
That's the
Bosa
thing.
And
like,
Mac.
Think about Bosa on one side and Mac on the other. Like if Khalil Mack is anything close to what he's been throughout his career, that is a pretty formidable duo there at outside linebacker for those guys.
Yeah, and the Brandon Staley, which I hadn't read yet. I'm actually going to read that after the show. He dives deep on the Staley, you know. And that's the thing. There's always more to it. We don't watch that team all the time. So, you know, or at least I don't. I have to raise my hand. It's like those primetime games. That Chiefs game especially was just like, man, what are we
doing?
Yeah. But it's an interesting – I'm sure there's more to that story. That's an interesting – it's a good idea to do that story. Also, makes sense that, like, this year, if they falter, he's the clear scapegoat, right?
No question.
That's how it goes in this league.
Tyler on the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, going back to the Titans, says, I'd like to make a PSA for the offensive line. Everyone needs to remember how bad Nate Davis looked in the beginning of his career, and now the consensus is he's a good player. If Petit Frere struggles, it doesn't mean that he's not going to pick it up, and patience will be key. This is from Tyler on the text line.
Yeah, Nate Davis was Nate Davis was banged up in his first camp too, and then he was not ready to play, and then he got out there because, my gosh, someone other than Jamil Douglas had to be out there after the Jacksonville game, and it took a while. Nate Davis and everybody, really, on the entire offense in the 16-0 loss at Denver looked completely hapless, and then he was good by the end of the year. So, agree, for sure. Petit Frere, there's going to be some growing pains in front of everyone. That's what happens when you're a rookie right tackle. I'm sure that they will help him, though. And, again, if Taylor Lewan can be on the island out there and they can just kind of focus on helping Petit Frere as much as they can, then I think they'll be fine.
We've talked about a wild week one of college football. It's not over, Joe Rexroad. There is a game tonight. Clemson taking on Georgia Tech. Nice ACC conference game tonight. Clemson favored by 23.5 in that game. Look, I'm not going to sit here and pretend like I have much interest in this game because I think Clemson's going to destroy them. I am interested to see exactly what they are as they move forward here. There were so many expectations for them last year. Obviously, Trevor Lawrence goes to the NFL. DJ Uiagalelei, the starting quarterback for Clemson last year. I will never forget how to say his name. You know, they're number 4 in the country this year. Can they live up to that? That's going to be interesting to watch this year.
Well, the guy whose name you just said perfectly is huge. Now, they do have, I believe, a freshman. Some people are already like, come on, time for the freshman. But, you know, every freshman isn't Trevor Lawrence. But I also, he was pretty bad last year. And I know he's lost weight, and that's a big thing with Uiagalelei is losing weight and being more of a run threat and all that stuff. He didn't run hardly at all. But also, he was an inaccurate, bad passer too often last year. So that's honestly the most interesting thing about this game is I think it'll be a blowout. And unfortunately, Georgia Tech, I mean, this is not a great – we usually get a better game on Labor Day than this one. It's kind of unfortunate. But he is interesting to me. See how he looks just – does he look like a different player? If so, well, then I guess I can buy Clemson in the top 5. They still are, on paper, completely loaded everywhere else.
Well, they got some interesting games this year. Obviously, in the ACC with Wake Forest, they got NC State coming up. Miami, who looked pretty good over the weekend. Florida State, who looked good last night. They also got a game with Notre Dame coming up on November 5th as well. So, a little Clemson-Notre Dame action later this year as well. So, look, I don't know. Like, it's hard for me to imagine they're going to get through this thing undefeated. I think they'll probably slip up somewhere along the line. And, you know, can the ACC get anybody in the college football playoff? Clemson's probably their best shot, but we'll see what happens on that front. It's been an interesting offseason for our boy Dabo and the way that he has spoken about the NIL and the transfer portal and all this other stuff. They had zero transfers, zero, not one transfer on their team. It's kind of amazing. We'll see how that works out for them moving forward.
They had zero that came in.
Zero.
Yeah, Dabo's trying to keep it old school, which is fine. But if you're losing guys, you know, I mean, Nick Saban's like, sure, we'll take good players however we can get them.
Yeah.
I think Dabo might need to adapt a little bit and also stop whining.
See, your least favorite coach in college football right now?
No, but he's the least likable coach.
Okay, I like that.
I put that on Twitter one time. People are like, he's the least likable coach. Come on. I'm like, no, I say he's the least likable coach.
Yes, there's a difference.
A big distinction there, yes. Dabo, big year for Dabo, though, because last year was just a bit stunning.
Yeah.
Shows you that what that position matters.
And it was a bit stunning. And what they end up going last year? They're like 10-3, weren't they?
Yeah.
Like, but, oh, okay.
But a guy named Pat Narduzzi won the ACC.
He did.
So, and, friend of the show.
Friend of the show. We'll have Pat Narduzzi on later this week as well. Looking forward to that. That's going to do it for us today here on the Labor Day version of Robbie and Rex Road. Chase, Willie, and D-Mace is coming up next. Hope everybody has a great rest of their holiday today. You're listening to 102.5, 106.3, The Game.